Good morning. Good night, Shabbat. Last shiur, we mentioned the idea that there's a value of Yediyas Hashem, whether you see that as an independent mitzvah based on psukim like Das Elokei Avicha, or as part of another mitzvah, such as the mitzvah of Emunah, as the basis of Emunah, or Dveikus, or Avas Hashem, or Vahalachta Bidrachav, or Talmud Torah. But this is something which, when we look at the Rishonim and the Achronim, we find is considered extraordinarily important. And many point out that Yediyah is Milashon Chibor. The Yediyah of Hashem is not just intellectual, but it's the basis for his Chabros, it's the basis for closeness and the like. We also noted towards the end of this year that even though at first there seems to be a great divide, a great machlokas between, let's say, the approach of the Rambam with respect to Agadita and the approach of the Maharal with respect to Agadita, in reality, we try to show that they're much closer. For example, everybody's going to agree, both the Maharal and the Rambam both agree, that Ma'amari Chazal and Agadita Midrashim are not to be interpreted literally, that they are hiding sodos, that you can't necessarily interpret them definitively, and the like. And while they do argue, for example, we will see today that according to the Maharal, perhaps a rejection of these types of Ma'amari Chazal reflect a form of kfira, whereas according to the Rambam we saw last week, it's not necessarily kfira. They certainly are going to argue in terms of practically how to interpret these Ma'amari Chazal. For example, what will be sufficient grounds to cause us to feel the need to offer an allegorical interpretation? Will we be bothered by questions that emerge from science, or will we be more dismissive of such questions? Will we consider philosophy in terms of the basis of our interpretations or not? Certainly in that sense there is much machlokas. But in terms of their basic approach, there is not, the two positions are not too far apart. Perhaps one could debate what the Gaonim meant. We saw the statements last week of the Gaonim, and what we're going to begin with today is the Maharal, and we'll see how he interpreted the ideas of the Gaonim. So we're going to begin, we're on page 55 of the source books with the Maharal, and we're going to start with Ber HaShishi and Ber HaGola. Ber HaGola, as you know, is the Maharal's work in which he tries to address the questions, the contemporary questions of his time. He lived in a time where there were many people that had the types of questions that you hear all the time nowadays. And specifically, people who rejected, scoffed at Chazal because of all sorts of statements. And the Ber HaGola is where the Maharal tries to answer these questions. We're going to start from the beginning of the Ber HaShishi, bottom left column of page 55. Hatluna hashishis be'amram ki hayan elam mehem chachma ha'enoshis hem ha'chachmos asher lefi ha'sechel ha'enoshi. So the Maharal here is going to defend Chazal from those who critiqued and claimed that there were gross errors in history and science. We'll skip a little. V'davar zeh im hayakach in other words, if it's true that Chazal made substantial errors in science, so then that would be a big problem indeed. Moreover, it would imply a degree of hypocrisy, because it would be in contradiction with the advice that Chazal themselves gave. Because they said, "Visa beperk chavis, amor lachach machosihi, im barur lachadavar ka achoscha shi asura, omrehu v'imlav al tomrehu. Chazal told us that you should only say things that you're sure about, and if you're unsure, you shouldn't say them, and certainly if they're false. Harei shem yishiru shelo yomar hachacham dvarim shehem bilti brurim. Mikol sheken shelo lomar dvarim zarim rechokim sha'af le'enayim nira ki adavar huzar. V'amar kasav shetia chachma mechuberes elav l'gamrei rotza lomar barur bivadai. Ve'az adavar hu b'sichlo v'dato b'chibor gamur aval dvarim shem esupakim u'mikol sheken k'shem rechokim davar zeh. And then he gives a very beautiful interpretation of the Gemara. We'll skip it now. What is meant by the analogy of Amor l'chachma chosihi? Skipping to the next paragraph. The hachachamos she'amru aleihem she'dibru behem zaros hi hachachma tiv'is v'chachma limudis. So now let's consider the types of statements for which, about which people critiqued Chazal. And they specifically critiqued statements concerning the natural sciences and the like. V'kvarnis bayar lecha, ki kol shehivium ledavar zeh, lachshov al chachamim kach, zehu mashematu bedvarehem shenasnu sibos ledvarim tiviim, shenisavim ba'olam. They saw statements in Chazal in which interpretations were given for scientific phenomena. Natural phenomena. Vayanir alahem ki asibos ha'elu rechokim sheyia davar zeh sibativit. So when they saw that Chazal were giving religious or metaphysical interpretations of naturalistic and scientific phenomena, they said that that indicates that they don't understand the science. For example, if Chazal were telling us certain metaphysical reality is associated with eclipses. So, for the scientist, that's troubling because eclipses are scientific phenomena which follow regular patterns. Uvishvil ze amru aleihem shehayu rechokim mechachmos elo. They therefore concluded that Chazal didn't know anything about science. Aval ein ha'emes kach klal ki lo ba'u ha'chachamim ledavar min hasibah ha'tivit. The answer to this question is that Chazal were not coming to give naturalistic explanations. They were not trying to give scientific reasons for things. Ki katon upachos hasibativit, ki davar ze yeus l'chachmei ha'teva. That would be appropriate for scientists. O l'rofim, lo l'chachamim, aval hem zal dibru min hasiba shemechayeva ha'teva. Essentially, what Chazal were trying to do was not to give the scientific explanation of an event, but the deeper explanation of the event, the truer explanation of the event, the explanation that's mechayev the scientific explanation. And therefore, it's not that they were unaware of the scientific explanation. It's not that the scientific explanation is not the correct or true explanation. On one level, it is true. However, there's a truth behind the truth. There's a deeper reason. From a scientific perspective, it's true that eclipses have regular patterns that relate to the nature of the orbits of the spherical bodies, but that is not the entire story. So Chazal were trying to give the deeper cause, the truer cause. V'amakchish davar zeh, makchish amuna v'atorah, kimo shehiz ba'er l'mala, she'amra Torah al osakasha. So we have, Baruch Hashem, an example from this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, the Torah says that the rainbow is a sign of the covenant between God and man that he's no longer going to destroy the world through a mabul. Now, to fully appreciate this, we should consider the Ramban on this point. Since it's Parsha Shavua, we'll briefly elaborate. So the Ramban says that when you read the Psukim, on a simple level, it sounds like the Psukim are telling us that the rainbow was introduced at this point in history, was created to reflect the covenant between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and man that he wasn't going to destroy the world through a flood. The Ramban then says a very powerful lashon, somewhat surprising, v'anachnu al korchenu na'amin l'divrei ha'yivanim. But we must concede that the words of the Greeks are true. This Of course, the Ramban, we know, is famous for frequently referring to the Yevanim Arurim, who caused so much problems with their kfira and philosophy. But the Ramban also was aware, and he says that there's a scientific explanation for the rainbow. The Ramban quotes it in his commentary, and rainbows are caused by the light diffusing through the prism, and therefore we can't interpret the pasuk kipshuto, and we must say that the pasuk means something else. What does the pasuk mean? It means this naturalistic phenomena which existed from the beginning of time, in which light diffuses through a prism and appears therefore in many colors, is henceforward a sign of the covenant between God and man. So here we have Ramban seemingly accepting that a question can be asked from science, and that scientific question can be the basis for reinterpreting the psukim. So it's not just the Rambam that would say something like this, but even the Ramban. On the other hand, it's not so simple. The truth of the matter is, the Ramban continues to show that that is in fact the more meduyuk way of reading the pasuk, because the pasuk says in, the pasuk speaks in past tense and not in present tense, and therefore, in fact, this is the, from a purely literary perspective, this is also the more correct reading. So a very important question within the Ramban emerges. Does the Ramban mean to say that if something is scientifically absolutely clear, then that in fact is the basis for reinterpreting the pasuk? Or no, the Ramban is really only willing to do this in our case because in fact, from a textual perspective, this interpretation is legitimate and even preferable. And this, of course, relates to a general debate about how to deal with science, and it manifests itself in many locations. One of the classical places that in which it's discussed is the machlokes between the Tshuvas HaRashba and the Rambam about how to deal with trefos. Do we say that the fact that there seem to be examples of trefos that are able to live more than 12 months is an indication? Nobody says that the halacha changes, at least immediately, but perhaps that means that the halacha was originally nikpe al pi a different metzias, but indeed now the metzias is different. Or do we say something along those lines, the Rambam's position, or do we say what the Rashba seems to say, which is no, that the scientists and the doctors that claim this are lying, it's inconceivable that Chazal were making a mistake. This Ramban, as well as other Makoros, are of course very important sources for this discussion. There's no need to spend too much time on this. Everybody knows the contemporary versions of this debate and the Slifkin affair and all that stuff. But with that in mind, we could go back to our Maharal. So the Maharal addresses this question, and he says, how are we supposed to understand the psukim? The psukim again say that the rainbow is a covenant, a sign of the covenant, and yet scientists tell us that rainbows are a natural phenomenon. So the Maharal answers that the Chachmei HaTeva Nasnu Sibat Tivit L'Kashas Kimo Shiyadua Midivrayam Aval Adavar Hukach Shehezber Asher Nitnat HaTorah Hu HaSiba Shelechol Davar Yesiba Tivit Mechayev Oso Vel Osa HaSiba HaTivit Yesiba Elokis. The Torah is telling us the religious perspective, the Siba Elokis, the reason behind the reason, and the scientists are telling us the naturalistic explanation. They're both simultaneously true, and therefore there's no contradiction, because the metaphysical explanation is Hu HaSiba Sibas HaSibas, the reason for the reason. Umizeh Dibru Chachamim. And he then gives other examples. He talks about things like Ramach, Evarav, and the like. First of all, again, we should note there's a general question, and again, I don't really want to do this today, but there's a general question in terms of seeming contradictions between Torah and science. How are they dealt with? The Rav at the beginning of The Lonely Man of Faith writes that these types of questions, questions from contemporary science, the age of the universe, evidence, fossil evidence, all these questions never really bothered me whatsoever. The only thing that really bothered me, that really bothers me, is the role of faith within modern society. So I'm not bothered by questions from science, I'm bothered by something else, and then he goes ahead and he spends the rest of the book dealing with the question that bothers him. He doesn't tell us over there why it is that scientific questions don't bother him. He simply states that they don't. The place where he deals with this more explicitly is in his work, The Halachic Mind, which is a very difficult work. And his basic theory there, he opens the book also with an interesting point. He says that there's been no point in history where these types of questions, questions relating to science and seeming contradictions between science and Torah, there's no point in history where these questions are less problematic than today. And the reason is because today's conception of science and philosophy allows for the possibility of accepting different perspectives which are seemingly disparate but are simultaneously true. The Rav invokes the notion of wave-particle duality and the like, how it's possible to view electrons both as a wave and a particle, even though that seems to be clearly a contradiction. If it's a wave, it's not a particle. They have different characteristics. And yet, they're both simultaneously true, reflecting different perspectives and different angles. And likewise, with respect to science and philosophy, and essentially the position that the Rav adopts, if you're interested in looking it up, the place where he most clearly articulates it is on page 55 and 56, a notion of epistemological plurality, which basically means epistemology is the notion of the study of knowledge, and plurality in the sense that there are multiple possibilities. There's no problem saying that from different perspectives there are different answers to the very same question. And that doesn't in any way contradict each other. We no longer have to accept the Greek perspective in which science and philosophy walked hand in hand, and there was a single explanation for all phenomena in the universe, but contemporary science and philosophy allows for multiple perspectives. The Rav doesn't quote the Maharal as far as I know, but he's essentially saying that very same theory. It's not just the Rav that says this. If you look at many, many thinkers, both contemporary thinkers and medieval thinkers, you'll have this same idea. Rav Kook gives the same answer. He actually gives more technical answers as well, but he also says the most fundamental solution is that the Torah is not meant to be a book of science. It's meant to teach morality and ethics and religion and the like, and therefore you couldn't possibly ask a contradiction. It's like asking a stira between poetry and biology. They're out to do two different things, Rav Dessler, and that's essentially what the Maharal is saying over here.
What about when the Torah seems to be addressing scientific questions? So then it's not really addressing?
Well, let's take the example of the Keshes. So the Keshes, we have the Maharal saying that there are two reasons for the phenomena of a rainbow. There is the scientific reason, which is true, and then there's the reason behind the reason, which is the reason that the Torah is providing. Now, there's no question that on a practical level, there are still questions that need to be raised, or at least if you're bothered by them, you have to consider the answers. And there's no doubt, for example, that one has to very carefully consider what types of evidence is needed to force a person to offer an allegorical explanation of the psukim. Do we consider philosophical evidence? Do we consider scientific evidence? We saw an example of that in the Ramban that we just saw for Keshes, and it's a question that the Mefarshim deal with. If you look at the Hakadama of Rav Sadia going to Chumash, the Rambam certainly deals with this in Mor Nevuchim, Rav Sadia in Emunos V'Deis. What types of explanations are necessary? And that's not always clear. But as a general approach and a framework. So this is what the Maharal is saying.
So when the Torah seems to be addressing a scientific issue, it's either not meant to be taken literally or it's not really addressing the science. I mean, it's just not.
Again, it might depend on the Hechreach, but yes, both of them.
And then in the case
times.
Of the Tesha, so mm-hmm. with the Raman's starting point was that the Torah, the halachic explanation and the scientific explanation are mutually exclusive. I mean, that was the
Havamina, correct.
Right, right.
So in that case, we have an example. The Ramban's answer and approach to the question is not the same as the Maharal's. The Ramban is seemingly accepting the question from science and therefore offering an alternative explanation to the Pasuk, whereas the Maharal is saying that their conclusion might be the same, but their approach is different. The Maharal is saying that science is offering one type of explanation while the Torah is offering a different type of explanation.
The Maharal would not have been able to be miyashev the Ramban's Havamina, meaning to keep the Ramban's Havamina.
Perhaps. Okay. Yes?
What about when Chazal themselves make scientific calculations to determine halacha?
That's a different story. And there are different approaches to that. You're correct in that what you're saying, that that's not the exact same question. And over there, we might take the approach that their science is an error and therefore the halacha follows our contemporary understanding of science. You might take the approach of Rav Dessler that the halacha is true and they were giving a naturalistic explanation of the halacha and we have to use our science to come up with a different explanation. There are different approaches to that. That is, in fact, you're correct that that is a different type of question and requires different types of answers. Yes?
I think the statement by Chazal that there were no rainbows during the generation of Chizkiyahu and during the generation of Rav Shimon ben Yochai because mm-hmm. all Bnei Yisrael were tzaddikim gemurim,
right.
And therefore they didn't need the protection of the rainbow. That flies in the face of it being a natural phenomenon.
No, neither if you... there's two points. First of all, one has to wonder whether that memra of Chazal should be taken literally or not. And we're going to talk about that a little later as we see, as we continue our discussion. We're going to see criteria that are offered in terms of whether or not you should interpret something literally. So if someone was really bothered by the question, they might legitimately say that's not meant literally. And at the same time, if you did feel that that statement was a literal point, it certainly wouldn't be in contradiction to the notion that it's a naturalistic explanation. The naturalistic explanation, let's take the approach of the Maharal, is how is it that rainbows happen? The answer is that light shines through a prism and diffuses. And that there were no sun showers during the time of Chizkiyahu. Now, you might say that's ridiculous, that's absurd, and therefore that's not meant literally. So there are different approaches. And oftentimes you'll learn the Maharal, and the Maharal will give two options. So raise a question like that, and he'll say, well, maybe it's not meant literally, and this is really what it means, or perhaps it is literal, and this is how we would answer the question. Okay. Let's continue in the Maharal. We're going to skip 15 chapters to Perek Tezvav of the Ber HaGolah, where he's going to deal with the specific quotes that we saw last week from the Gaonim. Beperek Tezvav, Be'imre Bina. Imre Bina was written by Azaria de Rossi, and it was a very, very powerful and strong critique against Agadita and against Chazal, and much of the Ber HaGolah is defending Chazal from the attacks of de Rossi. Hizchil Lidrosh Bahagado Shel Dofi. Shenimtza L'Razal B'Yerushalmi. Hada Agadita. Hakosva Ein Lo Chelek. Hadarsha Mischarech Vashomea. Eino Mekabel Schar. So the Imre Bina quotes the statement of the Yerushalmi, which tells us that if you write Agadita, well, you shouldn't write Agadita, if you write it Ein Lo Chelek, etc. And he sees that as an indication that Chazal themselves didn't take Agadita very seriously. Skip a little bit. Uvesof Kasav Derasi concludes, the Amna Sher Yotzi Osanu Mina Matsur Yehagon Hamiti Rashriragon Zal Vegam Beno Haholech Bedrachav Ki Rashriragon Bemegillah Starim Al Dvar Haagados Kasav Vizelishono. So to his capstone of his thesis that Chazal and Divrei Agadata should not be taken very seriously is the statement that we saw last week from Rosh Riragon, who wrote, Kihani mili denafka mipsuka, these are things, in other words, the things that are derived from a pasuk, the interpretations, umikri medrash v'agada, umdana ninhu, adkan, v'davar zeh, mashinimtza b'shem Rosh Rira, hani mili denafka mipsuka, asa atar l'rosho. So, Derasi took the statement of Rosh Riragon and based his whole thesis upon this. We're going to skip a little bit to page 57, the right column, second paragraph, third paragraph. Ve'atah, tsei ulamad v'perkasvina, yasev Rav Yochanan v'kadarish, aser HaKadosh Baruch Hu lahavi avanim tovos u'margolios. The Gemara in Bava Basra has a story of a statement made by Rav Yochanan, and one of the Talmidim didn't take it seriously, didn't take it literally, perhaps, or certainly seriously, and in the end, Nasu Gal Shel Avanim, because he was Maligal Divrei Chachamim. And you see from this story, as well as many others, the Maral says, that anyone who doesn't take the statements of Chazal literally, seriously, is in violation of a very serious breach. Ki ra adam bidvarav shekol davar shehu ktsas zar beinav omer shehu zar shehu amtsa'o ki yotzei bo. So that's what Derasi does. Amnam asher ratza litlos b'ilana rav riva kadisha, he wants to base his position Rav Sadia on Rav Shirgon shenimtsa b'shem Rav Shirgon hine lohevin divriagon, he didn't understand that statement. Shema yakav anas Rav Shirgon kemo shehevin ki divrei agada einam brurim rakim lefia machshava lama hayelo lomar hani mili denafka migo psuka v'chi lo nimtza agados rak osam sheyotz im minaksuvim. Let's look at the statement that Rosh Riragon says. What does he say? Those things which are derived from sukkim that are called medrash and agada, says the Maral, if he meant to say that generally speaking you don't have to take Divrei Agada seriously, so don't preface your statement by those statements which are derived from a pasuk. Just say simply that the words of Chazal aren't so serious. V'lama lo kalal kol agada lomar umda umdina ninu. Why didn't he say every agada is an umdina? Why is it specifically the derivations from the psukim? Ulekach lo evinas dvarav, and this is why he didn't understand his position. Ki agon zal ba lomar she'al yomar ki kasher darshu davar min ha-mikra v'hem be'emes rechokim min lashon ha-mikra. What do you do when you look at a medrash and the medrash gives an interpretation of a pasuk, and indeed this interpretation seems very far-fetched, it doesn't seem to be what the pasuk's actually saying? Vel ze amar ki hem umdina, about that Rosh Riragon said it's umdina. Rotzel omar hasvara mechayev ze, the conclusion that Chazal reached was misvara. Chazal were trying to teach a particular lesson, and that lesson was true, and they derived it independently from svara. Rak shesamchu ha'inyan ala kasuv, and they just attached it to the pasuk. It's like what we call in a halacha, an asmachta. The halacha is true independently. It's, for example, dindirabbanan, and then they saw it in asmachta, and that's what it means when they say they're umdina. They're umdina, they're svara. Chazal made up this idea, and then they attached it to a pasuk. Vim lo haya das v'asvara mechayev osam, lo hayu darshim osam min ha-mikra. But if they weren't independently true, if svara was not mechayev this idea, then they would not have sought to derive it from a pasuk. It's like a chassidish of art. But that's all Rosh Riragon meant to say. That doesn't in any way imply a lack of respect for Agada. Skipping a little, the Cholaraya Shehevi Mehad Amar Biushalmi Akosvein Lochelek Chas Veshalom Shiomar Davar Kazal Agados. No, when the Yerushalmi says that it's prohibited to write down Agadata, that's not because they're in some way inferior, but that's because there's a prohibition against writing down Torah Shebal Peh, etc., etc. And he goes through all of his proofs, and he shows that he's essentially missing the boat. Next paragraph, Umash HaKasev HaBeinu Nisim Gon B'Sof Brachos Amaisa De'uva Tamya HaMilsa Gadetahi U'V'chol D'Dumya Lei Amru Rabbanan Ein Somchan Al Divrei Agada. What did Rabbeinu Nisim Gon say, mean when he says Ein Somchan Al Agada? Lo Kemo Shehevin HaIsh Hu Shekasa V'Zel Lashono Kol Achas V'Achas Nemra Kefi Atzorech Limshoch Lev Ha'an L'Tam Zeh O L'Tam Zeh. It's not as De Rossi understood that these were just statements meant to grab the attention of the audience. No. Skipping a little, Rakshirot Salomar Shein Lismoch Al Divrei Agada Lafarish Agada Kepshuta. Ein Somchan Al Divrei Agada means that you shouldn't interpret the Agada Kepshuta. V'yomar Sheyesh Kach V'Kach Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'Lefikach Ein Lismoch Al Pshat Divrei Agada. And therefore, you can't rely on the simple understanding of an agadic statement. This is why many of the Gaonim said, Ein Meshivin Ba'agada. Why? Ki afshar ha'omer ota amru al derech ne'elam. U'lefikach, Ein Meshivin ve'ein makshin ba'agada lepshuta. I can't ask a kasha on you from an agadita, because maybe this agadita is not interpreted in its simple sense. Maybe you could offer an alternative explanation. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it. Kach yeirah medivrei ktsas mefarshim shezeu tam shein somchan al divrei agada vein makshin vein meshivin bagada mipnei ki kasher yashiv o makshe al hagada hu soser hagada hu v'efsher ki adavar in kasha ulemevin efsher lataritz. Maybe if you understood, or if I understood the agada properly, I would have an answer. And he continues on page 58, top right, Uvishvil Kach, Amru Gamkein, Ein Lemeidin Halacha Min Agada, the Yushalmi, that says you can't learn Halacha Lemaisa from Agada, Kilo Nizbar Al Yedei Kushyus V'Tshuvos, who was never interpreted based on a Shakla V'Taya, Shazaya Royal Lil Mode, Halacha Mitoch Agada. Then it would have been appropriate. In other words, it's not because it in any way reflects a lower truth. Aval kevan shelo nizbara berbirur, it wasn't fully interpreted, ein lemeidin halacha mitoch agada. And in that sense, it's similar to the principle of ein lemeidim halacha mitoch mishnah, or mitoch tosefta, that very same Yerushalmi. And then he continues, and he says, this relates to a general principle, that halacha reflects something which is normative, and therefore it has to be followed. But Agada reflects various different perspectives on a concept, and it's only presenting one perspective. Aval davar she'enu halacha l'maisa, kemo divrei Agada, davar zeh, af she'enu legamrei kach, rak betzad ma bilvad. It's presenting one perspective. V'hinei ha'Torah yesh la kama panim. But the truth of the matter is, the Torah and MS has many facets. Mikol makom davar shu halacha l'maisa einu rak panim echad. Aval shelo yu agados divrei Torah kemo shar Torah shenemra misinai. But to say that agada in some way is a lower level of Torah, somehow lower than all other Torah, which is said as Sinai, omer kach ein lo chelak liolam haba. This is what we said before. According to the Maral, if you were to take such a perspective, that is kfir gemura, ein lo chelak liolam haba. V'zemuchach mikol asher hevihu l'raya she'al yedei Hagada makir boro. Because as we know, like we said last week, that it's through Agadita that a person comes to have hakar v'kadosh baruch hu. So, I think that these paragraphs, these passages in the Maral, support what we were saying, that the position of the perspective of the Maral and the Rambam is not so different. Whether you accept the Maral's interpretations of the Gaonic statements, or you say that they're forced, and in fact the Gaon's position perhaps is more similar to that of De Rossi. But in terms of the mainstream approach, whether it's Maral or Gadita, and certainly the Maral or Rambam, or most of the most of those who are in between and who follow the approach, is not like the simple understanding of these Gaonic statements. Now, there are some interesting implications of this. For example, Rav Dessler on the left column on page 58 notes that because you can't understand Divrei Agada kepshutam, so therefore, if you're not going to understand Divrei Agada, you don't have to learn them, because anyway, you're not going to understand them. But Divrei Agada shelo nevinim, ein anu mechayavim lilmod osam. If we don't understand them, we don't have to learn them. Lismoch avodaseinu aleim, or to rely on them. Im ki barur shehem yesodos haTorah. Even though we know that in reality, these Divrei Agada reflect yesodos haTorah, because we're not understanding them. So our perspective is very different. Why should a person spend a lot of time reading Agadic statements if anyway they're not going to understand them? And because they don't understand them, they're not to be relied upon. Aval halacha shi lemaisa hare mechuyavim hinenu b'masei ha-mitzvos, and therefore it contrasts with halacha, where we need to understand them, we need to know practically what to do, im gam lo nevinim, and we have to follow them even if we don't understand them. Aval agada shehi ba lahair lelev hare kozman she'ena me'ira lanu einanu mechuyavim lis'asek ba ad sheniske v'nala lemadrega shenavinosa. And this is coming from one of the great Balei Machshav and Balei Agada of the last century. Yes?
Do you think for when something's concerned Agada?
No, sometimes I think you could debate it.
You mean, like, for instance,
most of the time it's really clear.
Like that story with Purim where Kirchhoff and Avanam got drunk and then he got killed and he brought back to life.
Yes.
I really think they got killed.
I'm not going to comment on that particular Gemara. You could ask me on Purim, but. But yes, there are certainly cases where it's unclear. The next thing I wanted to do with you, but I'm not going to do it today because we don't have time, is this Nefesh HaChayim. I just want to show a couple of small points from two of the most famous essays on Agadita. Yes, Sammy.
With the Svara of the Familia, that anything that we can't really understand, we shouldn't bother learning unless we absolutely have to be. How far does that go? There's a lot of things in Chumash that are just very, just totally out there. Well, now we're going to stop learning Chumash.
You're correct. So I think that's the answer. There's a halacha, you have to learn Chumash. And everybody, you're correct. He's not saying you're putter from learning it. You have to learn Kol Tarkula, but it makes sense to go in order and focus on a chelek of Torah. One's focus shouldn't be on things that they're not going to be able to understand. Chumash, so there's a chiyuv to learn it, and I think everybody could understand it at a certain level. And hafochba vafochba. When it comes to Divrei Agada, so since the simple, and here I guess is one way of formulating the difference. The simple understanding of Chumash is true and correct. Shuto shel Mikra. There's deeper explanations. There's Drash, there's Sod, and the like. But the simple explanation of Chumash is also MS. And therefore, even someone only capable of understanding the simple level is obligated to learn it. When it comes to Divrei Agada, the simple understanding might be totally false. And it's simply meant as a way of conveying Sodos HaTorah through means of a mashal. The Rambam in his Akdama talks about, of Mar Nevuchim, talks about how sometimes a mashal is true in its own right, and sometimes it's only valuable insofar as it teaches something deeper. And that distinction is essentially what we're saying. Even when Torah is trying to teach something deep, it's also teaching us something true on the simple level. The same point is not necessarily the case when it comes to Divrei Agada, and therefore there isn't a value in studying them, or certainly not a substantial value in studying them if you're not going to understand them. Yes?
So what would the chelik of Torah
if you can't reach it, meaning if you can't understand that God, that it's difficult to understand, there's no way you can understand it. Why would reading it help?
That's the point.
Right, exactly. That's why I didn't understand the question.
Okay.
Can I ask one?
Yes.
I mean, that's like anything in Torah. So if you don't understand it, open up a parish, talk to Rebbeim.
That's true. So that's that's true. That's one approach that you could do. Or you could say, let me focus, one second, let me focus, you're correct, but halacha you have to know. Here you might say, let me focus on another chelak in Torah, and as I grow and progress and I'm ready, I'll come back to this.
Yeah, but that's assuming that just because when you read a certain passage and then got it to like...
He's not saying...
That means you have to...
You're absolutely correct, and that's why Rav Dessler devoted his whole life to explaining Divrei Haggadah. That was his whole purpose. To do exactly what you're saying. Okay. We'll just read a couple of paragraphs from two of the most famous and important essays pertaining to Haggadah. One is Rabbi Avraham ben Aramam, one from the Ramchal. Rabbi Avraham ben Aramam begins on page 60. This isn't the whole thing. Take a look on page 61. The Rambam first begins by telling us, Rabbi Avraham ben Aramam, Rambam says this as well, that a person should not believe something just because it was said by somebody who is very wise. He thinks that doing so is in violation of lo sisa pnei dal v'lo sadar pnei gadol b'tzedek tishbot amitecha. We're going to come back to this point when we discuss the topic of Svara and the like. What are the sources for truth? What the epistemological question in terms of how do we know? Should we primarily look towards tradition, towards revelation, towards our own seichel? But here the Rambam, the Rabbi Avraham ben Aramam talks about the problem of relying upon authority. And skipping to the bold, ulufi akdama zu lo nischayev mipnei godel malas chachmei Talmud utchunasam l'shleimus tchunasam befer shator v'dikduka v'yosher amar imrehem b'viur klaleha uprateha. Bottom right of 61. Ashenit an lahem v'namid da'atam b'chol imrehem b'refuos uvechachmas hateva v'tchuna ulahamin osan kasher na'amin osan b'feirish haTorah shetachlis chachmasa b'yadam v'lahem nimsira lahorosa l'vnei adam kinyan shenamar al-piyata rasha yirucha. So here, this is the famous statement that everyone likes to quote, that the statements of Chazal should be relied upon when it comes to Torah, because Torah is Nimsar Elohim, and that's where they excelled, but not necessarily when it comes to matters pertaining to science and the like. Later on, he brings the proof from the Gemara in Psachim, Tzadi Dalet Amud Beis, in which there's a debate between Chachmei Yisrael and Chachmei Umos HaOlam, where exactly the sun goes at night. According to Chachmei Umos HaOlam, the sun goes below the earth at night. According to the Chachmei Yisrael, the sun goes outside of the kippah and above. In other words, the question is, how does it get from the west where it sets to the east? Either it goes below or it goes on top, out, and top and above. And Rebbe said about this, Ro'a ani es divreihem midvareinu. It seems like they're correct, because after all, there are hot springs, and what else would be the source of the heat in a geyser than the fact that the sun goes below the earth at night? Fine. So many point to that and say, you see, Rani es divreihem midvareinu, that when it comes to matters of science, we accept the notion that Chachmei Umos HaOlam may be correct and Chachmei Yisrael may be wrong. That Gemara isn't definitive. If you look, for example, at Rabbeinu Tam, quoted in the Shi'atim HaKubetzes in Ksubos Yud Beis Amud Beis, it's in footnote 121 over here, he says, no, that's not the correct interpretation. Ro'e Anias Divrei HaMidvareinu, means something else. It means that they appear to be more correct, but not that in actuality they are more correct. So there are statements from Gaonim, an example, and also in footnote 121 that seem to support Rabbi Avram's position. However, this is, as you know, from in our generation, a debate which continues to rage. Rabbi Aaron Feldman, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, has an article in which he defends or justifies those who attacked Rabbi Slifkin and why he thinks Rabbi Slifkin's approach is kfira. And in it, he has to address the issue that there are certainly many Rishonim and Achronim, or if not many, a handful of Rishonim and Achronim, who adopt his position. And essentially, this raises a very important issue. If we get to doing Ikari Amuna, we'll talk about this a little later on this year, that perhaps the possibility exists that something that at one point was a legitimate position has been rejected by Klal Yisrael, and overwhelmingly a different position has been accepted, and therefore something that at one point was legitimate and reasonable, while wrong, but certainly not kfira, can now be kfira. The classical example you see of that is the story, the position of Hillel, Sheni, and Sanhedrin, who said that Mashiach already came. Nowadays, certainly if you accept the Rambam, that would be kfira gemura. But at that point, it wasn't necessarily kfira. So he suggests that the Rambam's position falls under that category as well. And I just want to make an interesting insight that Rabbi Feldman has. It's part of a bigger topic, which also perhaps another time, maybe this year we could talk about if we have a chance to discuss what Kabbalah is. But essentially what Rabbi Feldman suggests is that the reason why this position, the position of those like Rabbi Avraham and Aram and the Gaonim, have been rejected is because of the proliferation and the acceptance of Agada, of Kabbalah. And that while during medieval times many Rishonim understood that the concept of Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Merkava meant physics and metaphysics, now it's been universally accepted that this refers to the mystical secrets, Sefer Yetzira and Sefer HaZohar and Sefer Tikkunim and the like. And therefore, since we have these Svarim now, they always existed, but now they've been proliferated, now they're well known, now we know that the source for Chazal's wisdom, even about science, was not simply the contemporary science books of the time, or not simply their Seichel, but in fact, through Giluyim and for Sodei Torah and the like, the basis of Kabbalah, some of it is Mesorah, but some of it is Giluyim, right? All of the Ari's Torah are through Giluyim. All the Ramchal's Torah are Giluyim. They were new. Now, what's remarkable, and again, maybe another time we'll have a chance to talk about it, but what's remarkable is that these ideas were accepted. The fact that all the Gedolei Torah of the time sat at the Ari's feet and accepted his Torah, that the Ramak, who was the greatest expert in sort of old school Kabbalah, the Kabbalah of the Ramban and the Kabbalah of the Sefer Yetzira and the like, sat at the feet of the Ari and accepted his words, and everybody, the Beis Yosef, everyone accepted it, even though these were Giluyim, is rather remarkable. But the point is that in the, whatever you want to, however you want to put it, in the post-Lurianic world, so the position of the Rabbi Avraham and Rambam and the like is no longer tenable, and that's why it's been largely rejected by the vast majority of Jewish thinkers. Yes?
So would he say that those Gedolim who did not hold by Kabbalah are kofrim?
Which Gedolim post that period didn't hold of Kabbalah? Very few. Meaning to say, the fact that the Rambam didn't hold of Kabbalah is not surprising. because at that point there were only very few people and the Rambam didn't have their Mesorah. If somebody nowadays or post that time would not hold of it, so perhaps yes. I think he would say that. But there aren't many that did. He doesn't feel like he's going out on a limb by saying that. Yes?
Well, two points. Number one, I think it's a fallacy and a stupidity to assume that that to say Chazal didn't know something, that they didn't know a science or they were weak in an understanding, implies disrespect for them. It doesn't. Of course,
nobody's saying that it does. Wait. But I'm saying, but nobody said that.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, maybe, you know, the what starts, you know, a person, you know, saying, like, saying that that if you do a say Chazal, that our approach of a Sifkin would be Kfira, would be, you know, a certain really a drag back, you know, to, you know, the times when, you know, religious people were religious thinkers were worshipped as demigods. As we know, that happened in the church. But in the sense of, but I don't know what Rabbi Feldman, but anyways, I still don't understand.
What Rabbi Feldman is saying is not that the position of Rabbi Avram ben Arambam implies a disrespect for Chazal, rather it reflects a misunderstanding of the basis of knowledge that Chazal had. That's a very big difference.
But I still don't understand, like, that doesn't, he doesn't prove that Chazal, just because we have
he doesn't
Torah,
prove anything. If you accept that the Torah is true, that Chachmas HaSod is correct, then that implies something about the nature of understanding that Chazal had, which has certain implications with respect to the scientific statements that they said.
But just because that the Chachmas HaSod has been revealed to us nowadays,
you could say they didn't have it, but part of the Chachmas HaSod was that they had it, and it comes from them. So it's in contradiction to the Zohar to say that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai didn't know Chachmas HaSod.
Of course, but the fee, I mean, even like what he called, I believe the Marsha says that different Amorayim and Tanayim and Chazal had a different strength. Like,
that's
one of them
true.
Were Bali Agadah, some of them were Bali Alacha.
Absolutely.
And to use, I mean, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, obviously, you know, he knew Chachmas HaSod. And to say that, you know, every Chazal's statement, it could be made, you know, by someone that's not necessarily like from Chazal's time, that didn't necessarily know, wasn't the person who knew Chachmas HaSod.
That's a possibility to take a middle position, and it's a reasonable position. I'm not saying it's not his position, but it's a position you could take, certainly. Okay. Yes.
Is this Shita claiming that the difference between Chazal and the Gedolim nowadays? The Gedolim nowadays definitely go to scientists to understand things. If the Gedolim nowadays knew Chachmas HaSod, then they wouldn't have to go to the scientists of today.
If you look at the Hagdama of the Ramban al HaTorah, or the Gra in his Hakdama to Sefer Tzniusa and the like, so many other sources, they talk about how the Torah can be the basis of all wisdom, meaning to say that a person can look at Torah, and if they know what they're doing, they can derive all wisdom, including scientific and history and the like. That being the case, the implication is that someone who is at a certain level of Torah will be capable of doing it. At the same time, that doesn't mean that everybody is capable of doing that. If you look at the Ramban's Drashas Taras Hashem Tamima, he makes that point. He says that, yes, if you know what you're doing, you could figure out science from Torah, but at the same time, most people, and even very great Torah scholars, aren't necessarily capable of doing it. That's why there is no contradiction between the statement of the Gra that you could derive Torah from science from Torah and the statement in which I think it's Rav Baruch Mishklov quotes in his introduction to the translation of Euclid, where he says that the Gra told him to translate Euclid because kafi shechaser la'adam in chachma, so he's going to be chaser 100-fold in Torah. These aren't contradictions. The Gra thought that if you really knew what you were doing, and he implies that he knows what he was doing, knew what he was doing, then you can derive science from Torah, but since most people aren't capable of doing it, it's a good idea to study geometry from Euclid, because if you're not going to be able to derive it from Bereshis, and then you're not going to know it, and you're going to be chaser in your understanding of Torah, so go to an alternative source. There's no question that at times even the Gemara said they went to scientists. They shalu asarofim and the like. And there are different levels and there are different madregos. And it's not always possible to rate everybody and to know exactly where their sources of knowledge were.
So would that mean that the contradictions that we see in Chazal for the science of nowadays, that being is that because they went to the scientists of the day and they didn't know necessarily the actual science, or is that because they didn't know the actual science but we're misunderstanding the science of the day? How would you necessarily prove, if we're going to accept that position, so then how do you necessarily prove one way or the other?
It's difficult. You're correct. And it's not a simple matter. And it raises other questions. Is it possible that anything that was included in Shas was included because it was accepted as true, and not just based on science? And you're absolutely correct. These points don't necessarily yield definitive answers about this question. One could fully adopt the concepts of Chachma Sasod and still say that Chazal turned to doctors and scientists of their time. Those doctors and scientists of the time made mistakes, and that is the basis of mistakes in science, scientific errors that you find in Chazal. That position is certainly a tenable and a reasonable position. In other words, the two questions aren't tluyim zebizeh. Some people argue that they relate to each other, but it's certainly not simply and necessarily the case. Okay, yes?
Just to clarify what Rav Feldman is saying, he's saying that we shouldn't worry about contradictions?
You read his article, his book. He's saying that the approach of Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam to answer the questions, which is to say that Chazal were based on the inaccurate science of their time, is problematic.
And rather?
Because the source of wisdom was not just contemporary science, but Torah Sasod.
And therefore, things that appear to be contradictions are really contradictions.
Presumably.
Didn't we see the Maharal also say that?
Well, you could read the Maharal one of two ways. Just to see one more source, because we're out of time. I just want to see one more source, since we're... If you take a look at the very last page, Lahayir, we're not going to do it now, but on page 64 in the Rambam, he raises the question of what considerations are necessary to interpret a story or a statement in Chazal as allegorical. He quotes his father, the Rambam, as saying that Rov statements are meant to be allegorical, and he gives examples of statements that he understands as being allegorical, statements that I think, if you look at them, most other thinkers would think that there's no problem interpreting these literally. For example, he quotes a story in the Gemara in Erevin about how Rabbi Eliezer showed incredible wisdom, knew about a guy and knew his father's name and knew his background, you know, one of the classical Das Torah Mekoros, and the Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam says that doesn't make any sense to take it literally, so clearly it's meant to be understood allegorically. So that relates to this point. The last page is from the Ramchal. In this essay, the Ramchal writes that the messages of Agadita are so obscure for the following reason. When the time came to write down Torah Shebal Peh, they did so because Eis Lasos LaShem HeFeru Sarsecha, and if they didn't write it down, it was going to be forgotten. The same problem existed when it came to the Sodos HaTorah, except that in that case, the option of writing it down explicitly didn't exist. And therefore, they had no choice but to write it down in a way that obscures the true intention of Chazal. And he goes ahead and he gives a number of ways in typical Ramchalian fashion, divides them into categories. So one type is a mashal, another type is what he calls derech helem, which means that they said a broad statement which only has a narrow application, but they didn't explain that. Just like sometimes you'll have a Mishnah that says a broad statement and the Gemara will say hacha b'mayaskin, and we're only talking about this case. The same thing holds true with Divrei Agada, but under those circumstances the Gemara doesn't say hacha b'mayaskin, and it doesn't limit this statement to a particular case. He says there are times when Chazal speak derech hakalos, like when they quote aphorisms which seem to be lighthearted and not particularly serious, when in reality those are hiding true secrets. And then he writes in his fourth category, Dalid, again the almost the very end, page 50-65, Od tzarich sheteda shedvarim rabim meikare hasodos your mizum chazal b'inyanim minateva o hatchunos. They hid secrets in their description of science and nature and the like. V'yishtamshu min alimudim shahayu melamdim b'doros haheim. They used contemporary science, anshei hachachma tivit v'atchuna, v'amnam ein haikar lahem ha'inyan ha'hu ha'tivi o ha'tchuniyi. The truth is, what was important was not the scientific point, but rather the kernel of truth, the message that was behind it. And therefore, you shouldn't be worried or pay too close attention to the scientific facts and interpretations that were given by Chazal, because in fact their true intention was to convey a hidden and a secret meaning and message that cannot be detected from the explicit text. Okay, Be'ezras Hashem, next week we will start a new topic. We're going to try to learn together Parak Aleph of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. I want to wish you all a good Shabbos. Thank you very much.